5 potatoes, 6 potatoes, 7 potatoes more.
Potatoes.
Welcome to the Potato Week Podcast with your host, Dan Fleming and Tom Crossman.
Thank you, TJ.
Thank you, TJ.
I just did it again. Welcome to episode 58. I said that confidently.
And you should, because you were correct.
Of Potato League Podcast. I'm Tom, this is Dan.
Hello.
For the first time in several episodes, we are back to not having a guest.
Yeah.
In other words, my brother Ryan is not here this week. So there is something that I wanted to talk about and a little topic that I was wanting to do today. But we have plenty, and second, I wanted to maybe wait until the week that Ryan was here.
Yeah.
And that's to talk about the Pearl Jam show at Fenway.
Yeah, definitely I would want both of you here for that. It's not like it can get spoiled for anyone. You're not going to sing the concert to them.
No, I absolutely will not.
So having to wait, I think, will be okay.
And then to kind of go along with that, we could finally do some sort of like a Pearl Jam top 20 song type thing.
Yeah.
Which I have thought of, have wanted to do as an episode for a long time, and I've had that dry erase board on my fridge.
I've noticed. Are the red ones one that come and go?
The red ones are ones that have either moved up or been added to the list, because it changes.
Yeah.
And, you know, every once in a while, and it doesn't change by, like, I'll hear something and then go, oh, that should be there. A lot of times it's every couple of weeks I'll just take a look at the list and just think, well, this one is not as much anymore as, you know, or something else. It's, so it kind of changes. The top, like, six? I would say the top six are set in stone.
We definitely have to do that, because my number one Pearl Jam song isn't even on your 20.
Huh.
So that alone will be interesting, I would think.
Now I'm going to try to think of what that could be.
Save it for the episode.
Do you want to save it for the episode?
Okay. For the episode.
All right. So yeah, we'll...
On our episode, you can place your guess first onto what, as to like when we start the discussion, what my number one would be.
Okay.
So yeah. Then we'll see at the end of the list if you are correct.
Okay. Yeah, we'll figure something out about on along those lines.
Yeah, it'll be good to have a Pearl Jam centered episode, because we can then also discuss, you know, the upcoming Temple of the Dog reunion that'll be happening shortly.
Right, and all of the... Have you checked out any of the re-release type stuff that they're doing for that? Like, just different cuts of the album.
Oh, I definitely did when they re-released 10 with all the additional mix and stuff. Yeah,
they. But all that stuff is up for all the Temple of the Dog stuff is up on
nice.
Pearl Jam's site at least right now. Because at this point, Temple of the Dog is now just Pearl Jam and Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
When it used to be kind of an even split.
Yeah, because there was two Pearl
three
Jam.
And two.
Well. Technically, Eddie wasn't even in Pearl Jam yet, so he was still kind of free.
No, it was three. It's three because MacReady, Stone, and Jeff.
That's right, yeah.
And then Cornell and Matt Cameron.
I forgot MacReady was on it as well.
So yeah, that was the original lineup, but now it's just basically Pearl Jam and Chris Cornell filling in lead vocals, but. yeah, we'll talk about that then, too, because I'm curious to know what, how the show is. Like, they're, because you can't just go out there and play, those, 10 songs? Is there even 10 songs on that album?
Yeah, I think there was exactly 10.
Yeah. Obviously, it's going to be more than that.
I've heard they're going to do some Mother Love Bone.
Yeah, which...
They said, we'll do some Mother Love Bone and some covers. So I'm assuming covers of Soundgarden / Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Band stuff. But you never know.
But would you consider it a cover if at least someone in the group is singing it now?
No,
doing
I
it now?
Not,
would,
but... Yeah. Like, yeah, because either way, someone from that band is playing the song right now, and that's not really a cover.
Right, right. So we will start out today on what we're hoping to talk about. We'll start out with Suicide Squad, and we're going to try to get to... We'll definitely do a couple Stephen King things, and then I have a few little things for games, and then the two Netflix shows.
Sure.
And also, I watched Popstar this week. I have a few things to say.
Also, I noticed this week, we had three, like, pretty large downloads from three places I don't think we've had listeners before.
What do you mean, pretty large? Like, multiple episodes?
Yeah, like, downloading, like, 15, 20 at a time. So, I'd like to say hello to those three new...
Really?
I would imagine three new listeners. Yeah.
Alright.
One in Great Britain, from the looks of it. One in Nevada, and I can't remember where the third one was from.
The one in Great Britain probably just thought, holy shit, is he from England? When you threw on that.
Yeah.
So, let's start out with Suicide Squad.
Jesus. Yeah, Suicide Squad.
Now, the interesting thing going into this discussion is that Dan has seen it and I have not, which I'm totally fine with. So I actually kind of, not extensive here, but in a way kind of framed it as I am an interviewer, you know, talking to someone about the movie that even though I haven't seen it.
And there will be spoilers.
Yeah, I mean,
I will not be avoiding spoilers.
I really, I at this point, that movie, yeah. I don't care what I still have a super morbid curiosity to watch it, and I definitely will, but I don't care about
spoilers.
The story
are essentially favors right now. Because I'm saving you.
Look
saving
out for this.
You time.
My first question is, like, in reading, you know, the kind of post-mortem what went wrongs, all week, which have been fascinating, by the way. It seems like, once again, there is a big difference between the movie that was shot and the movie that was edited and then sent to theaters.
Yeah, from what I've read, David Ayer presented his final cut, and they thought it was too dark, and it needed to be more in line with what the trailer had shown. So what they actually brought, they did reshoots, and they brought in the team that edited the trailer to edit the movie. I can't imagine David Ayer was happy about this.
Wait, they edited the whole thing?
They re-edited the whole thing.
I didn't know they had that much
they had
to
that
do with
much
it.
Say in it.
God.
David Ayer is saying, no, what was my cut is up there on the screen.
Yeah.
I'm thinking he just wants to work for Warner in the future.
He's being a good German.
Yes, he's falling into line. He's probably not happy, but, you know, he has seen that when people complain against big studios, you may not work for them again.
Right.
So, and maybe he had the hopes of, like, doing the director's cut Blu-ray.
Well, that brings in kind of the follow-up to this and makes it more inexcusable. They just did this.
Yeah.
And failed miserably. They just did... The studio interference, you know, the studio got involved with BVS, and the movie was not well received, and immediately after it came out, you heard, oh, well, there's a way better movie.
There's a director's cut, yeah.
And it's a much better movie that is not what you saw in theaters.
Yeah. Which, again,
begs
the question.
The fuck are they doing over there?
Why are you not releasing the longer cut if it's better?
What are they doing over there?
I don't know. Warner Brothers is... I don't know. When it comes to the DC properties, I just don't think they get it, which is weird because they have the comic employees working for them. Jeff Johns is like a major player now in their film stuff.
Not to mention, they have a thriving line of animated movies.
Yeah. Which more often than not seem to get it right.
And the big, I would say the big difference right away is that 9 out of 10 of those animated movies are straight out of the comics.
Yeah.
They took a very popular, very well-written... Mm-hmm. So you really can't fuck it up.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but you're starting out with gold. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, because they're not going to choose to animate a story that no one bought.
Right.
Because why would you spend... You're only going to spend the money to pay for the animation on stories that are well-received, well-respected, well-sold.
Yeah. And they... So, I mean, that's why the, you know, the animated movies are Flashpoint and Dark Knight Returns and that sort of stuff. So I don't understand...
why they can continually fuck up the
movies. And I wonder if it has something to do with, well, it's okay to, we feel like it's okay to put the animated, to use storylines that people already know for the animated stuff, because it's kind of just fan service, because the people that read it and love it are going to want to see it in this format, and then people that haven't read it, that's fine.
Yeah.
But we don't want, because there's such this, today there's such this there's such an aura of mystery around every fucking movie that is kind of paradoxical when you think about, you know, how much they show in trailers, but I mean there's always these big, you know, nothing's going to escape, we don't want anyone to know what happens in this movie. Well, you can't do that if we know you're doing Flashpoint.
Yeah.
And maybe they think for a mainstream movie that people won't go to it if it, like, gets out everywhere, you know.
And it's already a comic.
Yeah, it's already a comic, and we know how it ends.
I have to wonder, too, if it has anything to do with, like, Writers Guild rules. Because, you know, if you adapt something directly, that person who wrote the comic is either going to have to get a credit or get points or be paid a fee for using their idea.
Yeah.
So I can see why maybe, like, an auteur, like Mr. BVS Zack Snyder... Maybe he wants that writing credit as well, you know, because he's the writer on it, he's the director on it, he's the producer on it. It's his project, so I'm gonna make a story my way. It hasn't failed him so far. His movies make money. He keeps getting more jobs.
True. But how?
The only thing that he's done that I thought was well written on his part was, oddly enough, his very first movie, Dawn of the Dead, which wasn't written by him. That was written by James Gunn. Everything since then, Snyder's had, like, at least a co-writing credit in, or he just copied Watchmen panel for panel.
Yeah.
So it's like, I've never had faith in his writing. Ever. Nothing that he's written, I've been like, wow, that's a cleverly written film. So I...
But you kind of...
He sucks to me, but yet he continues to bring in the money.
Well, that's what is kind of leaving me speechless and having no other argument is that you're right. He... At the end of the day, the studio doesn't give a shit if the movie sucks or not. The studio cares if it makes money.
Yep. And since 300, he's made them more money than they've invested. So,
and that's why there's a Paul Blart 2. That's why Adam Sandler is still allowed to make movies.
That's because why he went to Netflix. He had to get away from the Hollywood system because they weren't going to let him do it anymore.
Yeah, because it got to a point that his fucking $10 million movies weren't even making money.
Yeah.
So, well, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. Whereas the average, in his heyday, Adam Sandler movie, because like we've talked about 100 times on this, the thing that people don't take into account when they look at these box office numbers is that comedies don't cost shit to make.
Nope.
In comparison to pretty much any other
comedy and horror. Those are the only ones that usually have no budget.
Because, you know, your big dramas usually have a big budget, or bigger budget, because they have
better
locations.
Script, better director.
Yeah, that too. They've paid a lot more people a lot more money.
You can't tell me most of the scripts Adam Sandler worked on were, like, really rewritten over, like, a six-month span.
No.
Those films were first drafts, shoot it.
Yeah, and I look at... I did it last night, like, looking at, and I'm amazed by it every time, that the guy that directs most of the Adam Sandler movies, like, his track record is abysmal.
He's never made a good movie.
Not just that, he's never made an average movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all terrible.
But they
terrible
all
movies.
Made money, they were probably all under budget, all shot within the time frame.
The under budget part I can definitely buy. Because, it's like they did not pay for a, you know, a rewrite or anything.
Nope.
They didn't bring in a second writer to read it over.
Which,
and
again,
polish it.
I think is part of Suicide Squad's problem. They apparently gave David Ayer like 6 weeks to write it. And then, they went right into production. You know, nobody's going to crank out... you always hear stories about, like, oh, someone scribbled out Pulp Fiction in, like, a weekend type of thing.
Yeah.
But it happens, but it's not normal.
It's not something you can ask someone to do.
Yeah, scripts are often looked at, written, rewritten, rewritten yet again. It's not uncommon for, like, eighth drafts to be the shooting scripts, almost.
Yeah.
And even then, they do rewrites on set.
Right, or, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't understand how the movie's making money.
Yeah. And Suicide Squad did. I think it might have been the number one movie again this weekend.
Yeah.
Which is holding much stronger than I thought it would, but...
It still dropped, like, 67%.
Oh, it dropped a very large amount.
Week over week.
Sadly common now for almost, even like the successful blockbusters, because if you do $200 million in your opening week, dropping all down of a sudden, to 90 is still a huge week, but you lost, 55% right there.
Right. I guess the thing that I'm curious, most curious about is, because the most interesting side of this whole thing was the Joker.
Yeah.
What is in the movie?
Okay.
And if you care at all,
there's
going to
be spoils.
Just fuck you.
The main problem I had with it was it sucked. Like, his characterization of the Joker was just awful.
Okay.
I honestly felt watching it like I was watching a Jim Carrey skit.
Oh, see, that was what I was afraid of.
It was way too amped up. He had the good dead look in his eyes.
Yeah.
But there was nothing that engaged me. Like, the second you see... I mean, like, with Heath Ledger, when he walks into that group of gangsters...
Yeah.
And does the magic trick with the pencil...
Yeah.
He's just fucking magnetic that entire scene.
Yeah.
At that point, you're like, okay, this dude owns this movie.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything with the Joker where you were like, he even owns this scene.
Yeah.
Like, I was cringing whenever he showed up.
Now... Does it surprise you coming from someone who is an Oscar winner? Or do you think this... Like, how much do you lay on him?
All of it.
Yeah?
I think because he was Jared Leto. I mean, they let him mail used condoms to his fucking, castmates.
Yeah.
I don't think they were going to be like, hey, you should tone down what you're doing on screen.
Yeah.
If you're letting someone, do bio warfare on his castmates.
Yeah,
you're
not some gonna really weird shit.
You're not going to correct him on screen, So I put it all on him. I kind of get where he was going, but again, his scenes weren't needed in this film whatsoever. Maybe the first one, which is the scene that shows how Batman gets Harley Quinn.
Okay,
he's there.
That's
the only time he's necessary to the film. Because Harley being with him is what got her caught. That's it.
Now that...
Of every other scene he's in, take him out, it doesn't matter.
Whereas you absolutely cannot say that about Assault on Arkham.
Exactly. He's the reason they're there.
Yeah. I remember when we talked about this way back, when we were talking about what the possibilities were for the plot, even if they had just taken, if they had just only taken one thing from Assault on Arkham, just have it be that the Joker is who they've been sent to get.
Yeah.
That is perfect.
Yep.
And you could have just copied that and nothing else.
Yep. And he just shows up to just kind of appear in scenes. And they got the relationship between those two wrong.
And
I think this is part of the director's cut versus the studio cut. They're almost a good couple.
They're more like a Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah, like Mickey and Mallory Knox almost essentially. There's nothing there that tells you this is an extremely unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
That's been the whole thing with the Joker, is he doesn't keep Harley around because he loves her.
Right.
He keeps her around because he can manipulate her, and he enjoys that. It's a terribly unhealthy relationship. That was almost all cut out. other than one scene where he tried to sell her to Common. But, like, he goes in to rescue her. He wouldn't rescue her.
No.
He doesn't care if she gets caught.
No, see, yeah. And
he would not stage a break-in to a top-secret science laboratory to get the codes to shut off the collar.
Yeah.
And then fly a helicopter into a goddamn war zone to rescue Harley.
No.
He would never do that.
And this is where my... And I think probably your Harley soft spot is in the same place, and that's where she originated.
Yeah.
There's one episode in particular of Batman the Animated Series where she is trying desperately to get his approval by doing all these things that he hasn't been able to do.
Yeah.
And like a kid who... you know, destroys the kitchen, making a, and burns the fucking something down to make their parent a meal, thinking that they're going to be
rewarded.
And instead, it's taken me a long time to say that when the Joker, when she presents all this to the Joker, he's furious.
Yeah.
That's the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't get that at all. And
how?
I don't know. They've had decades now of Harley material. So it's not even that there's too much. There's just, you know, it's not like, well, I had to look through 70 years of history. No, you had to look through 20 years.
Well, yeah.
She hasn't evolved that much between them.
And even then, you need to watch, like, maybe half a dozen episodes of animated series.
Yep, and you can get her.
And then a couple of other things that I'm failing to think of now, because there's, like, kind of two... That version of Harley is more, I suppose, kid-friendly.
Yeah.
Or their relationship is still messed up, but it's, you know, it's nothing that, you know, you'd walk in and your 8-year-old's watching and you're going, holy shit, what is he doing? But then there's another, a more adult thing where it's really messed up.
Yeah.
Like the
Arkham video games.
Yes, yeah. Where the relationship is, like, really fucked. Yeah. And dark.
Yeah, so you could go any of those directions. And they got them all wrong. Because they tried to take, like, certain ones from certain ones. Like, in the cartoon, it's kind of adorable when she calls him Puddin'.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird in real life.
Yeah.
Like, calling him that once, I would have been like, okay, that's a throwback. That's, you know...
Yeah, and a little nod.
Yeah. She said it, like, 7 or 8 times.
Did she call him Mr. J?
Oh, yeah. Mr. J and Puddin'. So she... Which, again... works in the cartoons.
Yeah.
And even in the cartoons, I bet she doesn't say it 4 or 5 times an episode.
No, it probably just seems like that.
Yeah, because she says it every episode.
Right.
But, no, I'm pretty sure she said Puddin' at least 5 times. And I'm just like, enough. Nobody calls their significant other the same name 6 times in a row.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen.
So if you want a good Harley story, if you want a good Harley, because I'm pretty sure that the 2 or 3 episode run where it's completely centered on her, the Mad Love storyline,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure you can buy just that, right?
Yeah, I think they issued those as like DVD movies back when they first started doing it. They would, like a couple episodes in a row, they'd release it as a movie or whatever,
right.
like the G.I. Joe miniseries.
Yeah, another one that I have is, or that I got for Colin, is the Brainiac Attacks section of the Superman series, and then also Son of Krypton, which is just the first 3 episodes of the animated series, you know, cut together, which is nice to watch it that way, you know, because it makes it a, you know, a 70-minute movie. Mm-hmm. It is cool to watch things that way, but... Point is, if anyone listening is interested in a good Harley Joker relationship line, it's Mad Love.
And they could have even gone with like the current Harley, you know, iteration, which is she's free from him.
Yeah,
and she's fine without him.
Yeah,
they could have gone with that.
Yeah,
and then just had like maybe that's why he keeps showing up was to win her back.
Better yet, they could have had the Harley and Ivy thing going on.
Yeah.
I'd have been down for that.
Which would have also made sense to have Ivy in Suicide Squad. And this was another problem that I had with the film. Most of them didn't do shit that was all that different.
No.
You had Deadshot, who uses his guns.
Yeah.
Katana with a sword. Harley with her mallet. Killer Croc with his fists. El Diablo, who was the only pretty much metahuman on there, but never really did anything until it, he absolutely needed to.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, he was the reluctant one. They were all melee fighters. Why would you have a team if it's, like, supposedly the best of the best?
Yeah.
Why would you have everybody that does pretty much the exact same thing? There isn't much difference between Deadshot and Boomerang.
No.
Both will hit you from a distance with something.
Yeah. One's more ridiculous than the other.
Yeah. And then you've got, like, a bunch of people who are just brawl. What is Harley Quinn going to do against anything?
Right. That's not what she does.
Yeah. And that's what—that's the thing. She has
is that what they...
so many action scenes in this with her wielding her baseball bat and being, like, a street brawling master.
See, that's not what she is in the... For the first thing you—and I'll ask this if this is played up in the... If this is used and used correctly in this movie, mm-hmm. is that the first thing that you have to know about Harley is that she's a genius.
Nope, doesn't even really mention it. It does, like, a brief little flashback of her just starting to talk to the Joker.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do anything scientist-y.
Scientist-y.
Like she doesn't... If I remember correctly, it doesn't even have her really counseling him. It doesn't have her saying anything that, you know, a clinician or a therapist would say. It just kind of shows her making moon eyes at him. So it's like the one, you know, her intelligence doesn't talk about it. And, because, like, that could be her only excuse for being on the team, is that she's a good strategist. They never come up with a strategy that would be like, okay, anyone here is a tactical genius. They're all idiots, apparently.
Because that's what she does. She's kind of what's the word I'm looking for? A saboteur. Mm-hmm. She causes mayhem mm-hmm. to distract from what she really wants.
Yeah.
And then sometimes just because.
Mm-hmm.
That's Harley.
Yeah.
Even though she's crazy and unpredictable, doesn't... You can be crazy and unpredictable and calculated at the same time.
That's what the Joker has made his bread and butter on for 70 years, you know?
And she is just the female version of that.
Yep.
With some differences, but what you're describing and what I saw in the trailers, frankly, because even as great as she looks, mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, Margot Robbie.
It's Margot Robbie.
It doesn't really matter what she's wearing, but she looked great,
yep.
But everything that I saw in the... Other than a few of the, like, little one-liner things, I'm just thinking, like, the thing in the elevator.
Yeah.
From the trailer, I'm like, nope. Yeah. That is not something she would have done.
Nope.
She wouldn't have been, not saying that she wouldn't have done that in that situation. Yeah. In the animated series or the good books or the good representations, she's never in that situation.
No. That's the thing. It's almost like they wanted her because she's one of the main stars to be a team leader.
Yeah.
But that's not really what Harley does.
No.
And it wasn't funny. The jokes that were obviously written in at the last minute, because none of them were ever set up. It's like, oh, look.
They were little one-offs.
Boomerang's in the middle of battle and he's drinking a beer again.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
And, like, even Will Smith, who can be funny if, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air showed us nothing. It's that Will Smith can be funny.
Yeah.
He's not funny. So it's like it's obvious they tried to lighten the tone.
Yeah.
To match the trailer and wrote in some jokes and just threw them in and they just fall so flat. Almost every single one of them.
I believe this is on digital recording stored for the ages if someone wants to go back and look. I'm pretty sure I bitched about the casting of Will Smith because... Mm-hmm. It's not that Will Smith is a bad actor. He's absolutely not. But this is not what he does.
Yeah. And it's not Deadshot.
Yeah, it's not a...
Okay, he's got the same skills and talent as
Deadshot. Yeah, but it's not a good casting decision.
No, because Will Smith can't be the villain. He just can't. And most of this movie was spent with us seeing what a good guy he really is. Except for when he's committing murder for money. The rest of the time, he's all about raising his daughter and loving his daughter.
Right.
You know, it's going to turn into the pursuit of happiness eventually. Type of storyline, and it's like, that's not fucking Deadshot.
So it sounds to me like, and I'm sure you could pile on a bunch of other stuff, mm-hmm. It sounds to me like the biggest problem with this movie, and it's inexcusable, mm-hmm. is that the people making it didn't understand the characters.
Yeah. I think Ayer, I mean, from what I've read, Ayer's cut is pretty dark. Which I think is still the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Because, I'm sorry, the fucking DC universe is morose. There's no joy to be had there. Making Suicide Squad dark...
Yes, there is. What's her name? Star Girl? Star Princess?
Wonder Woman?
No. The teenager that wears the Captain America E outfit.
Oh, yeah, Star Girl. But she's,
is that her name?
She's not in the movies.
No, but she's cheery.
Oddly enough, created by Jeff Johns, the guy in charge of all the shit.
Is that a name, Stargirl?
Yeah. Yeah, he created awesome. He created Stargirl after his dead sister.
Courtney...
I can't remember.
Something?
Yeah.
Because actually, I say that, and she actually has a pretty dark turn in whatever the event was last year. Forever Evil.
Oh, yeah.
She but it's a very good... Mm. I was... It's what made me notice her.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was kind of dark. But overall, I think when you, like, stuff from Justice League Unlimited is always, she's the sunshine in the room.
Yeah.
But you're right. Most of, it's because everyone has a, it seems like everyone in the DCU has a tragic background.
Yeah.
Whereas in Marvel,
it's some tragedy, but it's usually a tragedy that might benefit them.
Yeah, or
I mean,
it was...
with the exception of, like, Peter Parker, you know, his uncle dying, but...
Yeah, but that's not real... I mean, it's what made him do what he did with the power, but it's not what, you know, gave him the power. Yeah. You know, I guess what it is that in Marvel, more often than not, it's an accident of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or an experiment gone wrong. Mm-hmm. Whereas in DC, it's always a tragic event.
Especially in the Batman family.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody in the Batman family has a tragic something behind them. So I get
or
why
in
they,
front of them.
I get why they did that with much of this movie having Batman-related villains in it.
Yeah.
But this is something that they should have just embraced the ridiculousness of it.
Yes.
And gone with it. This should have been the Expendables of superheroes. Everyone's having a good time. It's really fucking over-the-top ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think that would have worked. That's why I think Deadpool succeeded so well. It embraced the fact that its very core was ridiculous. So therefore, go with it.
Well, and I don't we think that Deadpool is the exact reason for the reshoots?
Yeah.
Because it's right around the same time.
Yeah, Deadpool did huge numbers. So yeah, let's make this a little bit funnier, like Deadpool, only they forgot to employ anyone with humor to write the script.
I was actually noticing last night, and it's not really fair because of the order that these are coming in, but I was thinking, the last four or five superhero movies that we've talked about, mm-hmm. even though that's not chronological, have been bad.
With the exception of Civil War.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Going back to Civil War is the last good one we talked about, and, by the way, it's the last Marvel Studios one.
Yeah.
Because since then, we've talked about Suicide Squad now, mm-hmm. the X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about Fantastic Four
last
week.
We were
late
on the game on that one, but yeah.
It's in the order that kind of I watched them. So, it's not chronological, but it's like... And then, Batman vs. Superman, that was the fourth one that I was thinking of. So, yeah, it's like, I was thinking, yeah, the last four that we've talked about have been fucking bad.
Yep.
And, oh, by the way, the last one that was good was a Marvel Studios one. But then, to be fair, before that was Deadpool, which is
Fox, but I mean, even with my least favorite Marvel Studio films, they've still been better. Ant-Man, for as much shit as Ant-Man got for just being kind of blah, still way preferable to me over the DC ones.
Yeah, like, in other words, the best DC movie would be the worst Marvel movie. Is that what... Yeah. Would you go that far?
When you take away the Nolan films, yes. Yes, yeah. I would.
Do you take away the Nolan films?
Now I do.
Yeah?
Because he told his Batman story.
Yeah.
It was unrelated to everything else. So therefore, you know, it doesn't include it now. And having Batman in Suicide Squad was a waste. There was no real reason for him.
Yeah.
There was a cameo of The Flash in it.
Again?
No need for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this one he looked better. He actually showed up in, like, Arrested Boomerang.
Oh, really?
Which, again...
I'm okay with that, because he's a Flash villain.
But here's the problem that I have with it. You show the majority of your characters, and you're the ones that do get little flashback origins, it's always... It was Batman and the Flash who brought them in.
Yeah.
So then when they're a super team, you're like, why aren't Batman and Flash here? They already are aware of these guys.
Yeah. Shouldn't they be cleaning this up?
Yeah, they should be here getting this guy because Midway City, where this film takes place, I'm pretty sure the Flash could have got there to fix shit.
Midway City?
Yeah.
Is this...
It's a city, but it's like... Of all the cities that you could use, you use one that no one gives a shit about.
Now, geographically in the universe, is this near Central City?
Probably. I'm not exactly... I think it's more Midwest than Central City, maybe. I don't know.
Isn't Central City St. Louis?
Yes, essentially St. Louis. But I think this is more...
And Star City is basically Kansas City, right?
I was at Indianapolis.
Yeah?
Eh. Yes, Midway is probably like Des Moines. Because, let me tell you, the city gets absolutely fucked in this movie.
Yeah.
And
that's why.
Much like most DC cities.
Yeah.
You don't care that it's getting absolutely fucking pummeled. All of the villains were actually citizens a half an hour ago.
Oh, well, this is... Okay, this is my other question, is that... most of the time going into it, for better or worse, they've at least attempted to make an engaging villain.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like they did that
here.
She's
awful. Okay, for one, I'm not going to just besmirch her because she's a model. But she's a model.
Who is it?
I don't know. Carla.
Oh, Kara.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, she's the bad person.
She's the enchantress.
Oh, I didn't even see that. There's a problem with the movie right there. I thought she was with them.
She was never with them as a team.
See, I had no idea she was the villain of the movie.
She's what's his name? Rick Flagg's lover. That's why he's going along with Wong.
Whoa.
Yeah, because she's normally a good person, but somebody. It was essentially Hawkman and Hot Girl type of storyline.
Yeah, yeah.
Amanda Waller had possession of her heart, which meant she could control her.
Of course.
Yeah. And her lover, who is also long dead, has now come back type of thing.
Which is kind of a
villain team. No. Oh. Her ancient lover.
Oh. So, like, yeah. When... you didn't watch Heroes of Tomorrow. What the fuck was that show called? Here's Legend of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. It's essentially the Hawkman Hawkgirl story.
They did that.
Yeah.
But she was dating Cisco.
Yeah.
Which was
okay.
A little bizarre.
Yeah.
When he came back.
Yeah, this is not...
Connor.
Rick Flagg, who is just a soldier. A really good soldier, but a soldier nonetheless. I get it. I see that why you do make him your team leader. But no one ever bought the comic for Rick Flagg.
No.
They were buying it for the villains.
Well, that was another thing, in a lot of the stories, mm-hmm. Rick Flagg is just kind of the guy that, all right, you're with me, drives him to the place, all right, go do your thing, see ya.
Sometimes. He also engaged, but like he is the de facto leader when Waller's not around.
Yeah.
Just from a tactical standpoint, Amanda Waller is very good at this.
Yeah.
Why would she put the man who is in love with the person that is the villain in charge of the mission? Yeah, I don't think there might be some issues with that.
Smells like orange rinds.
Yeah. You don't put him in charge of that mission. That's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, I
but yeah, he is. She's a terrible villain, because she's